Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling something short, powerful, maybe not always fully unpacked. The preamble to the U.S. Constitution. It's way more than just an introduction. Think of it as a mission statement for a whole new way of doing government. We've got some great sources lined up, detailed breakdowns, really, that look at each phrase, what it meant then, and why it mattered so much. So our goal here is to unpack these words, understand the framers' intent, and maybe see how relevant they still are, you know, for governance of rights today.
Absolutely. And it's crucial to remember the context. This wasn't just tweaking things. It was a massive shift from what came before. A completely new vision, really. Each phrase deliberately builds on the last, leading up to this idea of self-governance. It sets out why this constitution exists and, importantly, who is creating it.
Okay, let's dive straight in with maybe the most famous three words, we the people. Seems straightforward, but what a statement. Before this, where did government authority usually come from? What made starting here so revolutionary?
Well, we the people fundamentally redefined sovereignty. It wasn't just a nice phrase. It meant the Constitution's power comes directly from the citizens, not from the individual states acting alone, not from the government it was creating, and definitely not from, say, a king or divine right.
So completely flipping the script on where power originates.
Exactly. It was radical for the time. And it also implies that these same people have a responsibility, you know? A responsibility to uphold both this new national government and their own state governments. It put popular sovereignty right at the front. The government gets its power from the consent of the governed, period.
Wow. Okay, so from who holds the power, it moves immediately to the first goal, in order to form a more perfect union.
Mm-hmm.
Given the recent history, then, the struggles between the states, what were they really aiming for with a more perfect union? What needed fixing?
More perfect was putting it mildly, perhaps. It was a direct reaction to the, frankly, disastrous Articles of Confederation. Under the Articles, the states often acted like separate little countries. They argued over trade, borders, money. The national government was incredibly weak. It couldn't even tax directly.
Chaos, basically.
Pretty much. So more perfect union meant moving away from that disunity. It meant uniting the states so they actually cooperated. And crucially, building a strong link between those states and a capable national government. Not chasing some impossible ideal of perfection, but building something that actually worked.
A functional nation, not just a loose agreement.
Precisely. Getting away from that near anarchy they'd experienced.
Okay, so unity first. Then comes established justice. This feels fundamental, but how deep did this idea of justice go for them? Was it just courts and laws? Or something broader?
Oh, it was definitely broader. Much broader than just setting up courts. Think about the contrast with rule under the British crown, which could often feel arbitrary. Established justice meant a system of laws that applied equally to everyone. The same rules for the rich merchant and the small farmer. No special treatment based on status.
Real equality before the law, then.
That was the ambition, and these laws were meant to reflect that equality. It was radical. And the deeper connection, I think, is that justice was seen as essential for protecting people's natural rights, those core Enlightenment ideas. A fair, impartial legal system was the foundation needed to secure liberty. Justice was the bedrock.
Got it. Now, the next phrase feels very practical, almost urgent. Ensure domestic tranquility. Keeping the peace at home. What was going on that made internal peace such a high priority?
Domestic tranquility was a direct response to real fear and instability. It meant the government's job was to keep things safe, peaceful, ordered within the country. And the why is crystal clear. The Articles of Confederation had completely failed at this.
You mean like Shay's Rebellion?
Exactly like Shay's Rebellion in 86. You had farmers, many of them veterans, rising up against debt collection. The national government under the Articles, utterly powerless. It couldn't raise an army. It had to rely on state militias, which weren't always reliable. It terrified the founders.
Right. It showed the whole thing could just collapse from within.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So ensure domestic tranquility wasn't just a nice thought. It was a promise, a commitment that this new government would have the power to prevent that kind of chaos and maintain internal stability. It was fixing a dangerous, known problem.
Okay, so internal peace secured. Then we look outwards. Provide for the common defense, protecting the nation from external threats. How did they see the new government doing this? What were the specific worries?
Well, common defense was another area where the Articles had been critically weak. This phrase states clearly, it's the government's responsibility to protect the nation and its people from outside enemies or conflict. The huge issue under the Articles was the lack of a standing national military. The federal government couldn't maintain an army or navy. It had to ask the states for militias.
Which sounds slow and unreliable.
Very. Imagine facing threats, British forts still on U.S. soil, Spanish ambitions in the West, pirates attacking ships, conflicts with Native American tribes, and having to hope the states would send troops. It made the young nation incredibly vulnerable. So the framers knew a strong, centralized defense, a standing army and navy under federal control, was vital for survival.
Not just survival, but also projecting strength, maybe, protecting trade.
Absolutely. Protecting trade routes, securing borders, having a credible presence on the world stage, it was essential for being taken seriously as a nation.
Makes sense. Now, a phrase that gets a lot of discussion, promote the general welfare. It sounds quite broad. What sort of economic and social role did they envision for the government here? Was it about everyone's well-being?
Promote the general welfare is definitely broad. And yes, its interpretation has evolved. But the core idea was that government isn't just about police and military. It has a positive role. It meant the government should actively foster conditions for a thriving society, supporting a stable economy, for instance, that benefits all the people, not just a select few.
So creating an environment where people can prosper.
Exactly. The underlying idea is that a stable, healthy economy is necessary to meet people's essential needs. If the economy is struggling, the people struggle, and the nation itself is less stable. So it acknowledges a government role in things like perhaps a common currency, regulating commerce between states, maybe infrastructure things that create a framework for national prosperity.
So less about direct handouts, more about creating the conditions for success.
At its core, yes. Though, as you said, how far that role extends has been debated ever since. But the intent was proactive involvement in the nation's well-being.
Okay, and that leads us to maybe the most aspirational phrase, secure the blessings of liberty. This speaks right to the heart of why the revolution was fought. What were these blessings, and who were they meant for? Was it just for them, or looking ahead?
Secure the blessings of liberty.
Yeah, that really captures the essence. It's about protecting those fundamental freedoms and rights that they believed were inherent, the ones they'd fought for. Things like freedom of speech, religion, property rights, due process, the right to participate in government. These are the blessings.
The core freedoms.
Right. And the government's job is to actively protect them. Mm. But the crucial part is who it's for. It wasn't just for their generation. The phrase explicitly includes to ourselves and our posterity. That's the long-term vision.
Posterity, future generations.
Exactly. The why is so important here. They understood that liberty is fragile. It's a gift that has to be guarded and passed down. It's a promise to future Americans, a statement of stewardship across time. They had to secure these rights, not just for now, but forever. Powerful stuff. And that all wraps up with the final declaration. Do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. What's the significance of this ending? What authority does it stamp onto the whole document?
This ending is the final definitive action, ordain and establish. It's formal, it's binding, it confirms this Constitution as the supreme law of the land. It marks the transition from that loose confederation under the Articles to a unified sovereign nation acting as the United States of America.
So it makes it official, legally binding.
Absolutely. It's not just a suggestion, it's the law. Created by we the people. And the reason it's phrased this way, the why, is to connect everything back. It essentially says this document is how we the people are going to achieve all those goals we just listed, the more perfect union, the justice, the tranquility, the defense, the welfare, and the liberty.
It ties it all together.
Precisely. It solidifies the Constitution as the chosen instrument to realize all those vital principles, giving it ultimate purpose and authority.
What a journey through just 52 words. We've seen how each piece of the preamble isn't just rhetoric, it's a building block. From establishing who have the power, we the people, to outlining these huge goals like justice and liberty. It really is the blueprint for the whole American project.
It truly is. And understanding the historical context, how, you know, the failures they were reacting to, the revolutionary ideas they embraced, really brings those words to life. But what's striking is how these principles laid out centuries ago are still so central to our national conversations, our debates about policy and direction, even today.
So relevant, absolutely.
The preamble acts as this constant reminder of the fundamental agreement between the government and the citizens and the responsibilities on both sides.
So thinking about today, as we the people face our own set of challenges, how do you see these goals playing out? Forming a more perfect union, establishing justice, securing liberty for future generations. How are these ideals being upheld, debated, maybe even reshaped now, in your view? What stands out as most critical for us today?
Something to think about.
That's all for this deep dive.